joke of the day is that there is no joke. We are the jokes because life is busy and we are busy. But welcome to Racing Home Podcast. You're joined by your guests or your hosts, Fez Bobber and Nick Agutter. We don't have a guest today.
No guests.
Nick, let's talk about what happened, man. We have a lot of updates to tell people with your car, with what I did and whatnot. So
yeah, we got a lot of catching up to do. So Saturday was a members day over at Harris Hill. So you drove down to Austin and stayed at my place. And then we went out and met up with some track homies. And again, yeah, members day. So we got open tracking to go and experiment. I was really looking forward to this because I needed to go and verify that everything I'd done to the car was kosher and could actually handle track environments. I've been doing some data logs with the Focus, and backstory on that, I've said this before, but like I have new intercooler 85 tune. So just re-data logging, getting the tune optimized again with JST or Brian from JST Performance. And on the street, there's not really a boost problem, but on the track, I discovered I had a bit of a boost issue, actually a really big boost issue.
Oh, yeah. So you got your car tested and then had those issues on the street, but now you're having those issues on track.
Yeah. So on the street, I can beat around. I can floor through second, third, and fourth, and never had the ECU go into limp mode. And I had a boost coupler issue, which I had talked about at the beginning of the year back in Dallas, but I thought I had that resolved, but it turns out I did not. So going out on track, literally the very first, it was the outlap, wasn't even warm, hot lapping yet, just going on the outlap, turn number three, and barely hitting peak boost, and the car is going into limp mode on the ECU side. So boost coupler was still holding on, but it was detecting an overboost situation for the given parameters. I don't know. A lot of stuff.
So what led to that, though? Like, what did you change from last time that's started causing you all those issues?
For the ECU, thinking it was going into overboost, the wastegate actuator. So I have a new TurboSmart wastegate actuator, and I thought that I maybe messed up with the preload because you have to set the preload correctly. But is that and the intercooler? But the intercooler should not have caused it to go into overboost. So I was concerned about the wastegate actuator. So we're tuning for that one. Message Brian, he told me to like go back to a previous tune. So I did that, went back out, same problem. And then I tried going out again and tried to go a little bit easier, and I didn't hit the ECU limit. But what I did hit was a boost coupler. So the boost coupler slid off. Then you and I went out, and I was able to buy new wrenches so I could actually get to this clamp on tighter properly. And I tried like the old hairspray trick, went out, popped off again. So I was like, all right, I have nothing else here to like go and try to like get this resolved. And also, whenever the coupler was popping off, it was only hitting like 22 PSI. Whereas like in stock form, as I've had it for the past 6 years, is able to go and maintain 24 PSI consistently. No problem. So at that point, it was my understanding was like, all right, we're not truly overboosting in the sense that it's like it's not hitting 30 PSI. It's not hitting any numbers as astronomical. I am looking at the intercooler piping versus the stock one. The stock one is a plastic end tank. But what that means is that it has ridges on it and a really, really fat lip for the clamp and the boost hose to like grab onto and actually bite into and stay on. Whereas the Cobb intercooler, it has smooth aluminum end tanks and a pretty small lip, to be honest, like the aluminum bead to go and have the clamp grab onto or prevent it from slipping off. Well, that bead is, yeah, too small. So it was slipping right off. So reached out to Cobb, and probably no surprise, but their recommendation was to, if I've already done the hairspray trick and tried adding better clamps, they go and purchase their hard pipe kit. So I was like, well, okay. That, sure, it's your own product, but it does make sense. And the other piece to it as well is that because this is a hard pipe, there's no real room for that flexible pipe on the OEM one. The OEM one can like flex backwards and pop off. Whereas in the hard pipe kit, there's no actual movement for the pipe to go backwards. Like if it truly wanted to go backwards, I have to unbolt it from the transmission. There's a little like bolt it goes into. So in any case, so Monday I reach out to the Cobb location here in Austin. Fortunately, they're here locally for me, about 30-minute drive from the house. They had one in stock. So I am driving to their location on the phone, giving them my credit card number, securing it before someone online purchases it from underneath me, pick it up, and then that Monday night I get it installed. Tuesday, I hop online to see, like, okay, I need to make sure that the boost tubes are actually good to go. I need to verify that I actually have my boost problems resolved, at least physically.
Mm-hmm.
When's the next track day? I was thinking, like, this weekend.
I didn't know you got the Cobb hard pipes.
Yeah, I got it Monday.
I thought you were just putting an extra clamp on there.
Nope. I bought the whole kit. It was like a $400 kit.
Jeez.
Bit of fix. It works.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Because like it was, it replaced all of the piping from the turbo to the intercooler, and the piping from the intercooler to the throttle body. All that piping is brand new right now.
Gotcha. So that's good to know. I mean, so continue on with your story about how you're finding the new event.
Yeah. So anyways, so Tuesday morning, I was like looking around and seeing like, all right, or trying to plan out like, all right, realistically, when's the next time I could get on track? Because I don't have a lot of weekends between now and Rev Up. So this weekend is Carol's birthday, so I really didn't want to do any track stuff on Friday or Saturday. Happy birthday, Carol, if you listen to this tomorrow. Saturday, helping her out with some errands. Sunday, have friends coming over to work on their car. And then next weekend, go Columbia. Weekend after that, we're still in Columbia. Weekend after that, it's getting ready for Rev Up. And weekend after that is Rev Up. So I was like, okay, realistically, I have no weekends in my mind. So then I looked on Motorsport Reg, saw that there was a track night in America up in Dallas, 3 hours away. And it was Wednesday. It was yesterday as of recording this podcast. So I told Carol, I was like, hey, I'm heading up to Dallas tomorrow evening. She goes, what for? I was like, I'm going to a track day. And she was fully supportive of me heading up there. It was only like $155, and I've never done a track night in America, so I want to see how it was run.
Did you have to sign up for an SCCA membership?
You don't have to. If you don't have a membership, you have to pay $20 more than SCCA members. And the membership is $80 for the year. So basically, the way I saw it is like, if you track more than four times a year with them, then go and buy the membership. Otherwise, just pay the extra $20. I don't know how often, I don't know if I'll do it again. So I didn't pay for the membership for now. But after my experience yesterday with them, I may sign up just to do some more events because it was a lot of fun. So in any case, so work Wednesday morning, had lunch, and then drove up to Crescent, got there. The event is super, super chill. So gates open at 2 p.m. and advanced and intermediate drivers meeting is not until 4 p.m. So you have 2 hours of prep time. And then at 4:20 is advanced people going out. So I'm in an advanced group and I head out there and I was like, it was literally the same exact scenario as Harrods Hill. Immediately, I go into ECU Limp mode. And this is with the latest revision that Brian has sent me after Harrods Hill. So I was like, oh no, like, did I really fuck up the wastegate actuator? Like, he has now sent me three different tunes that supposedly should have worked. And they all are hitting this ECU Limp mode. So I immediately get pulled back in. Send him the data log, and he is such a homie since I had told him ahead of time that I'd be at the track, and I was like, hey, do you mind helping me out between sessions? And fortunately, he was online and able to do that. So he sends me an updated log, I head back out, and it's fixed. Literally, it was just like one more tune that it was resolved.
What was the issue?
I don't know. He did some kind of, he did something on the boost tables and on the
trickery.
Car. Some kind of trickery.
Black magic.
What I will say, okay, so at Harrods Hill, the very first tune, I'm gonna literally call them by the revisions. Revision 17 was utilizing some custom boost logic that Cobb had released and he was trying to play around with it. It was not based off factory boost tables. So when I first hit that boost table at Harrods Hill, he told me to flash back to tune 14, which was utilizing the factory boost table, boost logic, something like that. And at Harrods Hill, that's when I then discovered the boost coupler. So when I got to Crescent, I tried tune 14 again because it the only issue tune 14 had was that it was the boost coupler was popping off. But this time, tune 14 was actually popping off the coupler. I'm sorry, let me repeat that. Tune 14 was now also hitting the ECU limit, and the latest revision 18 that Brian has sent me also had the same problem. But then it looks like you're holding a dildo now. For all the audio listeners, Fez has picked up his Fanatec or Fanatec shifter for his Simrad. It's an anal bead. This episode is now explicit. In case, and he's stroking it. God damn it, now I can't focus. Okay, so moving on. So I told Ryan, he sent me an updated one, and yeah, everything's fixed. So once we got on to tune revision 19, I was no longer hitting the ECU limits, and I was actually able to go and start hitting go wide open throttle for multiple sessions. And the other thing that was really cool is that the SCCA people, like I had spoke to them and told them what I was there to do. I was there to shake down the car. And they initially said that, like, well, hey, if you only get a couple laps in here, let us know and we'll like work with you and work with me. They did. So I had signed up for the advanced session, but they were allowing me to go out in the intermediate and later in the evening, the novice sessions, because I was only doing one or two laps. Really, I was actually only doing one lap to get a wide open pull and then pulling back in the pits to go and have Brian look over the log and send me a revision. So over the course of yesterday, he sent me 4 revisions, and it feels really good. He sent me another one this morning, and I'll try that out on the highway. But I don't think I'm going to be able to do another track day until rev up, unfortunately. But in any case, if the latest one has some problems, I'll flash back to the one I was using at Crescent. But here's the kicker in all of this. I now have a new issue. That's completely non-boost related, non-ECU related. It's now something physically with the suspension.
Well, let's recap though. So you had a limp mode issue.
Because kind of like your dildo that you're holding is kind of limp.
Yeah, I mean, this is as hard as it comes. But it's...
Please watch our YouTube videos so you know what I'm talking about. That's for all the audio listeners. Go on.
Anyways, so you had limp mode issues because your car was overboosting, which was a tune issue, and then now the tune is fixed.
The tune is good. Yeah, the tune is fixed.
Brian helped you tune the car on track when you were at Track Nights of America. The boost coupler popping off is also fixed due to Cobb's new hard pipes that you installed.
Correct.
So we got the limp mode's fixed and the hard pipes are fixed. And now you have a third issue that you just developed.
Developed or discovered. So I still need to figure out what exactly it is, but what I learned yesterday on the track is that whenever I would go into, like, when I was going 10 tenths into a braking zone and slammed on the brake, I was feeling like this clunk, and at first I was thinking, like, holy fuck, maybe it's my one of the bolts that had to come out when I was doing the transmission. What's the bolt? The ball joint, the lower ball joint. I thought maybe the ball joint was loose, but I jacked up the car in the pit lane, or not in the pit lane, but back at the paddock, and torqued it, and it's at torque spec, so wasn't that. I checked the torque ratings, the bolts were the top hats, it wasn't the top hat. So to the best of my knowledge there, that then ruled out anything going on with the coilover being connected to the car, either from the top or the lower ball joint. Also, I checked the knuckle where the coilover slips into. That was torqued and tight. What I was unable to truly check was if the coilover itself is okay. So I was so that was a clunking sound. And then while digging around in the engine bay, I saw that I had some kind of like fluid. It wasn't water because it wasn't evaporating on hot surfaces. It was sitting there. And when I touched it, it was kind of slippery. So at first I thought it was brake fluid. But then I wiped down everything on the brake booster, brake master brake cylinder, the reservoir, and also tying down the cap as tight as I possibly could. Went out, and the brakes always felt fine. I always had full brake pressure, never had any brake feeling issues, but it was like this random clunk that would happen only when I was really pushing it hard. And I could feel the clunk if I like braked incredibly hard in the beginning, and then rather than trail braking, like lifted off the brake smoothly as if I was trail braking. Thank you, Carl, from last episode. If I release the brakes rapidly and like shifted the weight back again, like towards the back, then I would feel kind of a small clunk. So it felt like, and also the best way I could describe it almost felt like it was coming through the steering wheel. So to me, that felt like something like towards the top. That's why I was thinking like maybe the top hat was messed up. So in any case, in all of this, I can't really tell, or all the signs kind of, for me, point to potentially there being a leaky coilover or a leaky shock. But as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to go into the garage and jack up the car and take the wheel off and verify for myself. Mm-hmm. But there is something going on. It could be one single issue being that it's the shock. But then sitting here thinking about it, if I jacked up the car and the shock was truly like separated, I think the wheel would like flop down. Would it? Because like it's the coilover that's holding the wheel up. Like if I disconnect the top hat, the wheel falls further down. So I think it's the I don't know. I don't know enough about suspension design.
You're McPherson Strut, right?
Yes.
Sorry, I don't know if I have to sneeze or not.
I couldn't tell if it was a sneeze or like you thinking really hard.
I was thinking if I needed to sneeze. So you're McPherson Strut, and your clunking is potentially coming from the top. Like there's a chance that the coilover might have separated. That's what happened to Dana when he installed his one-way motons at Gingerman. His rear motons were basically decoupled from the bottom shaft to like where the cylinder goes into the shaft, the mounting hardware part.
Yeah.
The internals that kind of connect to it, it was decoupled. And it was squatting quite a bit under load.
Interesting.
Right. And then when I blew my shock, my valve was like, the valve inside was either stuck open or closed. Where it was
fully
compressed. My front left was fully compressed. And then when I pulled in, like my suspension was like sitting. There's no preload. It was sitting on the basically the spring was doing everything. The damper itself was fully compressed as much as it could be.
Yeah.
So when I jacked my car up, the wheel came down, but like it was stuck. It was coming down very, very, very slowly because, like, I think the valve was either inside, internal valve was just bent or something that it wasn't allowing it the fluid to flow and let it push back down.
Hmm. Okay.
So, and there was, what's it called? Oil spewing out of it, too. So there's oil in my wheel bay. Wheel well. It could be either one for you. I don't know. I mean, is your suspension compressed? Do you notice like the steering angle change? Did you notice that like your suspension ride height's different? Anything?
No, nothing like that. Okay. I think maybe the front end's a little bit more bouncy than I recall it being. So that's why I'm leaning towards it being the shock.
How long have you had this coilover?
Three years since 2021. Okay.
Well, first I would do is check all the torque settings on your coilover overall.
Absolutely.
And then check also if there's any oil leakages from anywhere, like rub the shaft, you know, a little bit. That sounds wrong. But yes, first I would check, you know, all the torque settings on your coilover, your suspension.
Yep.
And then see if there's any oil anywhere on the shaft. Also, I would like touch the shaft a little bit and see if there's any like residue of oil on there. It's been 3 years since you've had your coilovers, and usually they do need to rebuild after like 2 to 3 years. So it could also be that.
I think it's just that time. I think it's realistically that even without the suspension issue, it is like time to go and get them serviced.
And your coilover is so cheap that it's probably cheaper to just buy them new again instead of like.
I agree. Yep. No, I definitely agree. The thing is, like, I was hoping they would last this whole season, and then I can look into it for next year. But looks like that decision is going to have to advance by about 8 months.
Now that you have finally fixed all the other issues, now you got to deal with suspension setup issues if you do replace your coilovers.
Yeah. I'm not too worried about that. I don't know. Like, I felt like I set these up pretty quickly, but I think well, yeah, it's going to suck. You know, you're right. But it is what it is. We'll live with it.
So what are you thinking now? What are you going to do about the coilover?
I got to figure out what the problem is and then make a decision from there. If it's something that, if it really is the coilovers, then I'll look around and probably, I already spoke to Chris at Inertia Labs. So he said that.
I lost you again. Nick.
Okay.
Oh, you're back.
Yeah, apparently my internet's crapping out.
It's okay. I was entertaining the audience with the In the Jungle song.
All right. So now we have swapped over to just my cell phone.
So you were saying you talked to Chris.
So I talked to Chris, yeah. There is a chance that it could be ready. But if not, then I'll have to look around for some off-the-shelf options.
Ready what? Like your rebuild for that?
No, I would order like brand new coilovers.
Which ones?
It'd have to be custom coilovers from Inertia Labs.
Yeah, but he doesn't make coilovers. He has them set up to your car pretty much.
Oh, well, we haven't gone that far.
Okay. Well, if you didn't know, our sponsor for the podcast, Marisa Motorsports, does sell coilovers. Through Inertia Lab, actually.
That's precisely why I went called him up. Because I figured that I could have asked you to see, like, hey, what are the chances that I would get a coiler? But I figured I'd go straight to the source.
Makes sense.
But yeah,
Inertia Labs is a great option to go through. I don't know what coiler he will set you up with. I'm assuming he'll also set you up with Nitrons, which honestly not a bad option. They're great. Your Nitron is a European company. And your car is a basically European car, so I'm pretty sure they would make suspension for your car, too.
Yep. Also, I just turned on a screen recording on the phone so I could use this video for the YouTube portion.
Ah.
The audio is going to be... audio between YouTube and Discord is going to be very different, but it's okay. But yeah, that's awesome to hear that. He asked me, like, what car 2017 Focus RS has. He was like, oh, yeah, that's fine. We can work with that. So.
And the other option is for Fortunato is obviously too. You know, your other option is also Fortunato. You can try that.
And the lead time would be like after Midwest Fest. It'd be way. But that brings up another option is I just don't do Rev Up or Midwest if it gets to that point.
That's like super last resort though.
That is like 2 days before I'm supposed to head out last resort.
Yeah.
Because I can install the coilovers and do a street alignment the same day. Worst case.
Yeah, let me know. I'll drive down to help you out too, needed.
Well, to do the install, you wouldn't have to drive down for the install. I would just need your help for aligning, potentially. But over at Gingerman, they have that alignment pad. So mm-hmm. I could do the alignment, drive it out on the street, or maybe on the track and feel it out. Probably the street. Street definitely. Verify the track. But I've got all the tools to make that happen.
Cool.
So we'll see. Anyway, that's all the updates I got. Harrisville Raceway, discovered boost problems. Crescent fixed my boost problems. SCCA are homies for helping me out and allowing me to get the time that I needed to figure it all out. Me for staying up in the late evening and helping me tune the car between sessions, and then you're a homie for potentially hooking me up for coilovers.
Gotcha.
What else? What do you got?
So going back to I guess the Harrisville weekends, I also was down at Harrisville with you. Drove down a GR86. My plan was to also test my car that weekend, but my car is too loud to pass sound at Harrisville. And I don't want to tow my car all the way down there and just not be able to drive all weekend. So I ended up driving a stock GR86 down to Harris Hill. It was a good time. The stock GR86, it was fun. The last time I drove a stock GR86 was down when I bought my car and I drove it down from Kentucky to Dallas. And this car... like I also got to track a GR86 on track with Harrisville too, just for like a session or two. And it was really fun. It was really playful. Yes, it had some understeer because it had like positive camber in the front and why not.
Right.
But You know, like if you were to dial the camber settings in and just drive the car as is, like don't touch anything and just monitor oil temps, the car's a blast. Like I had a great time in the car, and I don't know any car on the market right now for that's that cheap that gives you that kind of a feeling. I say Miata is the only one.
Are you talking about brand new or used?
I'm talking brand new.
I agree.
Yeah, like I don't get
phenomenal package for a brand new car to dual drive manual. Tossable. Like the ND Miata, maybe, but like fun in a slightly different way. So it really comes down to preference, in my opinion. They both have, but
another analysis on the ND Miata is that first is that this limited slip does not come in every ND Miata. It only comes in the club.
Yeah.
And it's more expensive. So it's like $35,000, I think, for the club. So it's actually more expensive than the GR86. At least for the one that you want.
Yep.
And then it's low arm power compared to the GR86. It's not as fast, right? Yes, yeah. It's lighter, so maybe it's more nimble and maneuverable, but I think the GR86 is a pretty good package overall. And I also don't, most people don't fit in the ND. Like, I don't fit in the ND.
Person, I have no problem. I think if I had to put a blanket situation on the two cars, I would put the GR86 and the BRZ Twin over in the track environment on track road course, and I put the Miata on autocrossing. Like, if you just asked me to blanket, like, one for one car in one sport, put the other car in the other sport, that's where I'd place them. Realistically, you could drive either car on the track or on autocross. And at that point, it's preference and price.
If I lived in a hill country where there was, like, not hill country, but, like, mountains, where, like, Italian mountains or the
different hill country is not mountains.
Definitely not that. No. I'm talking, like, Italian back roads or, like, the French back roads.
Yeah. I was going to say something more curvy than an overpass in Dallas.
Yes. Basically, I think at that point, I would have to say that ND Miata is better. It is better because it's, like, a lighter weight car. You don't need a lot of power. And it's just a convertible, we could enjoy that, right? But I think overall, as a package, overall package right now available on the market, I'm not biased, but I'm a little biased. Trying to put that bias aside, I think it's still a really good car in stock form. And it kind of made me realize that maybe I like screwed my car over. You know, I can't drive it every day.
Yeah, but your car also would not be at the top of Club TR or near the top of Club TR. So depends on what you want to do. Exactly. Do you want to on the street all the time? If so, then stay stock. If you want to be near the top, do what you've done. If you want to have a little bit of both, don't do what I did. But like, I'm in the mid pack in street, so I can come. I can drive my car to the car to work, drive to Dallas, and drive on track, and drive back home.
Other than that, I came home, and I'm adjusting my splitter right now, swapping over my splitter mounts because they bent, adding some splitter rods as well, got the car corner balanced yesterday, going to get it aligned today, and I will also be doing an SCCA event next weekend to test the car out.
What track?
ECR.
Oh, nice. Good.
I'm doing the 1.6 ECR, not the 1.27.
Oh, you're actually doing the short one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done the short one before?
Nope.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I think it's going to be the same situation. Like, I'm just trying to set the car up to how I want it to be. I don't really care about times or anything like that. So it's going to be a test day for me.
Yeah, some people were asking me about times I did at Crescent. I was like, I didn't time myself at all. I went out on my street tires that were still inflated 46 PSI cold. And the reason they're inflated that high is because the stock tires require PSI on the little rubber band 19-inch wheels.
Mm-hmm.
The door card says 46. So I put it, even though I'm on 18s, or TPMS.
Mm.
TPMS sensors.
Did you, I would check the ratings for those Falcons that you have on there for street tires. If they're not rated at 46 PSI, I would not run them at 46 PSI.
They are. They're rated for 60.
Okay, then you're fine. But yeah, did you not drive it on the track tires then?
No, I just left it on the street tires.
Oh, sweet. Sounds like fun. Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, that was my weekend. Getting the car set up now and gonna get some like minor stuff done. Left that's left in the car. It's like minor stuff, but it's a lot of stuff. So I'm just, I feel like I'm forgetting a lot of stuff in here. Like I gotta do a brake bleed. I gotta do install my spats again. I gotta install my door handles on the car. And what else do I have to do? Oh, make the transport windows.
What are you gonna make your transport windows out of?
I was gonna make it out of the corrugated plastic boards that you can get. You know the ones that you made poster boards from?
Yeah.
Yeah, from Walmart. I'm just gonna cut those to shape it like a window.
The exact same kind of material that I use for the underside of my hood vent. So like whenever I'm driving the car around, or if I park somewhere and I know it's gonna rain, I always keep one in the.
Luckily, my intake is very hidden from the environment.
Yeah, mine's not. I have a sealed intake box that I can I can swap over in like 5 minutes if I get to an event and it's raining.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, if it's just a rain that I can wait out, I'll just cover it up momentarily. So, anyways, I'm gonna go figure out what's clunking around my car, what the leak is coming from. Hopefully, it's the same source. So one solution fixes two problems.
I hope you don't have to buy new coilovers. That's an expensive thing to do. Because then you're out like $4,000 at minimum.
Don't remind me. I know.
And then you got to sell Carol's Tesla, and you know she's mad at you for selling the Tesla. So.
Actually, I'd probably sell the Expedition if it really came down to selling one of the two. Selling the three cars, I'd be selling the Expedition.
Yeah, and then just driving the car to events.
I was really just focused on making sure the ECU was fine. And then once the ECU was working, it just got into my head. Like, all right, well, let's push it. And started sliding the car around. Also, I wasn't like out there for 20 minutes at a time. I never did more than 2 laps. And then I came in. So. It never really. Yeah. Oh, oil temps, coolant temps are fine. So hopefully. 85 is keeping it cool. Seems like it is.
Well, anyways, I'm going to get going too. Good podcast. We can conclude. Nick had a very stressful past week. I am still struggling with my car a little bit, but not struggling, just trying to figure stuff out. Hoping to do a good test event next Saturday or Sunday, and we'll be ready for Rev Up. And then we'll have an actual racing home podcast from there.
True. The way you just described, like, Nick has some struggles, but he's over it. I'm not over it. I'm over the original struggle, but I have a new struggle now that I need to figure out what exactly it is. So.
True that. Good luck. Let me know if I can help in any way, dude.
I might be slamming the Expedition, tracking that at Midwest.
Do it.
They don't let me.
It will be in Street GT with V6 Twin Turbo.
Yeah, I'm showing up with the V6 Twin Turbo in a 10-speed auto. Slam your Tundra. Let's go and do SUV. Body on frame racing.
Truck day, truck racing. Let's go. I'm down.
We still need to go mud bogging with Devin and Eddie.
Can't believe do it before I sell the truck.
We can do that in Midwest. We'll do it in the pond.
All right. Let's go.
All right. Talk to you later, man.
Take care, man. Bye.